Hello and welcome in to the first ever Right Bench podcast. My name is Logan Hill. I'm joined by Noah Ferguson. We work for the Left Bench. We're the two beat reporters for the Maryland men's basketball team this season. And we relaunched the Left Bench writing side coming into the fall. And we kind of taken it our own way and gone with the Right Bench, W-R-I-T-E. And so let's just get started. Let's let you get to know us. And Noah, I'll let you begin.
Yeah, Logan, so excited to get this thing started. I'm Noah Ferguson. I'm a junior journalism major here at the Philip Merrill College at the University of Maryland College Park. I am the editor-in-chief at the Left Bench. I started at the beginning of this year as we relaunched the Left Bench writing side, the Right Bench, as we fondly call it. And I'm also the deputy sports editor over at the Diamondback, as well as their volleyball beat writer. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. What about you, Logan?
For sure. I am a senior also at the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland. I am the main beat writer, I guess we could put it that way, for the Right Bench this year. I did football in the fall, shifted over to join Noah, and we did basketball. We're doing basketball together right now. And then in the spring, I'm pretty sure I'm going to do men's lacrosse. I mean, I don't know exactly what's going to come of that yet, but yeah, I mean, I also work with the Diamondback for their blog outlet. It's called Terps Watch. We do a lot of Twitter content. That's been a lot of fun, and that's something I've been with since I was a freshman, so it's kind of cool to just see it out. And then I also do a decent amount of work with the student radio. It's called WMUC Sports. And Noah, you and I have actually been on a broadcast for that together. That's one of the ones that jumps out to me as my favorite. So happy to be here doing the podcast now as we – the Right Bench podcast, the Left Bench. I mean, the real stars of the show, Don't Tell – Kevin and Katie. But yeah, so I mean, let's get right into it and let's talk all things Maryland basketball.
Let's do it.
Let's get started in a season that's kind of been like no other. So Maryland men's basketball has gotten off to an 8-7 start as of the recording of this podcast. We're recording on Monday night ahead of their game against Northwestern on Wednesday. And look, it has not been pretty. I think you would agree, Noah. It has not been pretty.
Yeah, yeah. The word that keeps coming to my mind is tumultuous. That's what I would say for this, especially with Mark Turgeon parting ways with the program after a 5-3 start, which is really something that came to Logan and my shock, and something that you seldom see with teams, especially programs like Maryland, who have had such success in the basketball sphere for a while now. So we were really shocked by that. And this is my first year covering the men's basketball team. And so it was a crazy sequence of events to start this year. And it's really left a lot of questions on the table as we continue this season and as we get into the meat of the Big Ten play.
Absolutely. And the game that ultimately led to the changing of the guard, Turgeon departed 2 days after. It was actually Noah and I's first game together on the beat. Also my first time covering as a beat reporter Maryland men's basketball. But, yep, they played in the Big Ten ACC Challenge against Virginia Tech. It was Len Bias night. They honored him. His parents were there. Everybody got Len Bias jerseys. And they came up just short in that game. And 2 days later, I get a call from Noah. I was taking my Friday off. There was no Maryland athletics that day. I get a call from Noah, and he's like, yeah, Turgeon's out. So we put together something on that day, and Danny Manning took over as head coach, interim head coach for the rest of the season. Brought on this year as an assistant, a longtime friend of Turgeon. They were teammates back at Kansas. But he's the head of the show now, and Maryland is 8-7 and 0-4 in conference play coming into Wednesday night's matchup. Let's take a step back, though, from the games themselves, and let's talk about the roster. And there was a lot of new on this roster, for lack of a better term. I mean, Fats Russell coming in from Rhode Island, Caduce Wahab coming over from Georgetown, and a lot of other pieces, Xavier Green, Ian Martinez, Julian Reese, just to name a few. And they kind of were expected to come in and mesh with Hakeem Hart, Eric Ayala, who was expected to be the guy for this Maryland team, and then Dante Scott, who also was expected to take another big step forward. That was a lot. Is there anybody that maybe has stood out to you so far that I didn't touch on right there?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of got into the heart of it there, but I will just say that entering this year, Maryland was regrouping, having lost an insanely talented player in Aaron Wiggins last season, who really who led the charge for them, at least offensively and defensively. And then kind of, in my opinion, their heart, in Daryl Morcel, who's been a rock for them for several years now. So they've really been regrouping. Fats Russell, Kadus Wahab, Ian Martinez, Xavier Green, they're all new pieces. And then coupled with their 10-year head coach that just had just brought them in, suddenly departs. So, it's been tough kind of giving these players grades, especially so early in the season, because of the amount of change that they've had to deal with in such a short amount of time and on such a big stage. You can tell how much the Maryland fan base has meant to the program, both in a positive and negative way. But these fans are just so passionate for this sport in particular. So it's been tough to be able to grade some of these players, but that's what we're going to get into here in the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, absolutely difficult to grade them, and maybe unfair to grade them 15 games in, but at least we'll have a starting point for the end of the season. And let's start with some of the new faces. Let's start with Fats Russell, the guy that came in to be the point guard of this Maryland team, coming out of Rhode Island. I actually referred to him the other night on a WMUC broadcast, kind of like a Tasmanian devil out on the floor. He is one of the fastest players I've ever seen during my time at Maryland, has one of the best first steps that I've ever seen. His body type is in the mold of an Anthony Cowan, but they couldn't play differently. Fats is 110% all the time, and I think you've seen that during stretches this year.
Yeah. I mean, Fats Russell, he's dynamite with his speed. It's crazy to see him, and he's smaller than he looks very small in person. And that's when you're going up against the Kofi Coburns of the world, and you're driving into the paint like Fats Russell always is. It's tough, and it's definitely going to be an adjustment for him, a continued adjustment for him as he came over from Rhode Island. Definitely not seeing the competition that he is now. So, he's averaging 12.5 points a game. He's leading this team as a new piece, with all this stuff going on. So I can't give him a terrible grade for what he's done so far. He's had his moments of I don't understand why he's driving there and he's not kicking it out. And he puts up some questionable shots sometimes, but I really think for the amount of time he's been in College Park, he's had a positive impact on this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. And he's averaging 3.7 assists per game to go along with those 12.5 points. So really all you can ask for out of your point guard is get to double digits in scoring and get some assists on the board. And he's doing just that. I think he's finally at this point, him and Eric Ayala are starting to figure out how to play off one another in that backcourt. And sometimes they look like world beaters, and other times they make you shake your head and scratch your head at the same time. So, but his Instagram, his Twitter, his like social media handle is Limitless Fats. And sometimes we do see that here in College Park, I would think so far.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about Fats is that game against Florida, where Logan and I went up to the Barclays Center up in New York in Brooklyn, and we saw I think kind of what Turgeon and Manning were envisioning when they brought Fats and Ayala together. They combined for, I don't remember off the top of my head the exact amount of points. It was 30. They both had 20, they were both in the 20s for points, and they really carried that backcourt really carried the team to a solid win over Florida on the road. And so you can see the flashes of potential there.
So Eric and Fats combined for 38 that game against Florida. They both had 19, so a little gave them a couple extra points within the 20s right there. But yeah, no, and that was just really, I, for one, love the charge in the game of basketball, and Fats went out there and drew a couple of them in that game. Really just, you talked about it, he's not the biggest guy, but when you can make an impact on the defensive end like that, that's, you can't ask for much more out of a point guard, and he has just had some very, very, very good bright spots so far during his time as a Terp. Moving along to another transfer, Kadus Wahab, the center from Georgetown.
Yeah, Kadus Wahab, another piece that's new. I think he's definitely had his struggles. And part of that, I believe, is the move into the Big Ten. The Big Ten has some really strong players down low that maybe he's not used to coming from Georgetown, although Georgetown has some good competition as well. He's definitely had his struggles, I think, especially with his speed. He tends, in my opinion, to not be the quickest with the ball, and it's led to some sluggish play, and he's kind of disappeared from some games. I think that you were saying this, Logan, when Illinois played Maryland, Kofi Coburn made him look like a shooting guard, just size wise. And I don't think that the season's over for him. I think that he can still have a very positive output on this team. He showed it. He showed it earlier in the season. He can really get those. He can bring down rebounds. He can score. He just needs to adjust more to Big Ten play, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And just on the year so far, 9 points a game, 6.8 rebounds per contest. So not gaudy numbers by any stretch, but Maryland lacked a true center last year. So that was one of the first things Turgeon went out and addressed between the seasons, is he went out and got a prototypical big man in Wahab. And he started out the year hot. He had 17 points in the first game, 18 in the second, had another 18-point performance a couple of weeks later. But just still, I believe probably the jury's still out on him a little bit. And I just – the thing that I have said all season is I haven't figured out yet how Fats and Wahab work together. Because to me, they're the opposite style of players. Because with Fats, you want to go as quick as you can. You want to space the floor and you want to give him room to run and gun. Wahab's much different. You want to put him in the paint. You want to get him his touches. So I believe that's something that Danny Manning's going to continue to tinker with throughout the season and find a way to make both of those players have success in this system. But yeah, I mean, he started every game. Maryland's had every player that started this season start every game so far. Wahab and Russell, along with Eric Ayala, Dante Scott, and Hakeem Hart. Caduce Wahab, solid big man, has disappeared a little bit recently, but that doesn't mean he can't come back for a resurgence here as we really get into conference play. So those are the two starters that are new. We'll address some of the other new pieces in a second. Let's move to that trio of players that came back. Hakeem Hart, Eric Ayala, and Dante Scott. And just coming into the year, I knew that everybody kind of had high expectations for Eric Ayala, and Dante Scott included. Hakeem Hart was a little bit of a question mark. Nobody knew what his floor versus his ceiling might be. What did you expect out of them, Noah? And what have your expectations been met, or what's the deal with all that?
Yeah, I won't say that my expectations have been exceeded by any of them. There hasn't, in my opinion, the problem, one of the big problems with this team on their losing skid has been they haven't had one player step up and really take control for the team down the stretch, especially. And I mean, speaking on Eric Ayala first, because Eric Ayala went into the season, could have been in the NBA draft, and came back and was going to be and is the leader for this team. However, he has stretches where he completely disappears. And I think that's because Eric Ayala is the number one option. And teams game plan around Eric Ayala, and it takes him a while to, and it shows in his statistics. It takes him a while to adjust to how they're guarding him. For example, in their last game, he scored 0 points in the first half, 19 in the second half. You can see how gifted of a scorer he is. It takes time for him to adjust. And so that's kind of my thing on Eric Ayala. And as for Hakeem Hart, I think this might be a hot take, but I think he has the highest ceiling of any player on Maryland. I think that he has spurts, and he showed it last year as well. He has spurts where he's the best player on the floor. He can shoot lights out. He can drive to the paint. He makes good decisions. He doesn't turn the ball over a crazy amount. But there are also stretches where he doesn't get the ball, where he's not a first or a second or even a third option at times. And that has led to his struggles at some points and disappearance in the game. And that kind of goes for Dante Scott as well. Dante Scott is another extremely gifted player. He's a very valuable piece to this team, and he's made some big buckets, especially in that Florida game. it's just there's times where the team as a whole and these players individually kind of sink back into the shadows a little bit. So there hasn't been a player that's really stepped up, taken the Anthony Cowan leader role that, or the Aaron Wiggins leader role from last year that the Terps have needed.
Absolutely. And just going back for a second, I was just pulling those three guys' numbers real quick. I misread Fats' stat chart. It was 3.7 rebounds per game. He's actually averaging 3.8 assists per game. So a little bit better there, and 58 assists over the first 15 games. But yeah, Eric Ayala coming into the year was expected to be the guy. And he's a senior now. I'm a senior as well. When I was a freshman, they had a great recruiting class. It was Jalen Smith. It was Aaron Wiggins. It was Eric Ayala. I believe Ricky Lindo was a part of that class too. And I want to say Trace Ramsey might have rounded out that class, but Ramsey and Ricky Lindo ended up moving on. But yeah, he came in and it was finally time for him to be top dog. He played second fiddle to Anthony Cowan, second fiddle to Jalen Smith and Anthony Cowan the next year. Then it was Wiggins last year who kind of burst on the scene, and Ayala was able to play off of him along with Morcell locking things down defensively. But yeah, I mean, he's averaging 15.5 points per game and 4.7 rebounds. So good play. He's a big, strong guard. He plays off ball. He's a better shooting guard necessarily than a point. But yeah, disappearing for stretches when you're supposed to be the team's main scorer, the main offensive threat, it's not a good formula for winning games, and that's what we've seen so far. I believe that he's still – I mean, we saw it – what was that? Sunday night against Wisconsin. All of his points came in the second half. Didn't have any points in the first half, came out and made 3 3-pointers, got an and one. Just solid play, but you want him to take that one extra step that could put him up amongst the conference's best. For Dante Scott, he's averaging 11.6 points per game along with 7 rebounds. So exactly kind of what you want out of a power forward. And more so recently, he's looked like that guy that can go for stretches and really be a dominant player. And I actually absolutely love your take about Hakeem Hart. 8 straight games with double-digit points for him, 8 straight games in double figures. And I believe it's tough to pigeonhole a guy and say he's necessarily a team's X factor. I'm living this season by the thought that when Hakeem Hart is on the floor, good things happen more often than not. And you see it when he drives to the rim. You see it when he's able to get in the passing lane and get a steal. Not the marquee name in this starting lineup. I think you can make an argument he's fourth or fifth if you were just ranking them by who they're supposed to be. But he started every game, and he's looked like a great small forward in this conference along the way. So that's the starting five, but the bench has a lot of new pieces this year. I mean, namely Xavier Green, he put on a show a little bit against Wisconsin, matching up against Johnny Davis. Ian Martinez, who's played a lot this year, and then Julian Reese, the big name, the four-star recruit from St. Francis in Baltimore. And just he has had his moments where he's looked like a star, but you can also tell he's a freshman. So, and Maryland doesn't go deep into their bench. I mean, those three are about the only ones you'll see in a game. Simon Wright might make an appearance here and there. Marcus Dockery had some time when Ian Martinez went down with injury. But what have you liked out of Maryland's bench so far this year?
Yeah, the bench has definitely left a lot to be desired at certain points, but you saw the potential of it against Wisconsin, namely in Xavier Green. Xavier Green really surprised me against Wisconsin on Sunday, and he said in his post game that they have a really great bench, and I think that Wisconsin game was a really positive sign, especially from Xavier Green, who put up double-digit points in that game. He was knocking down big shots, and he also had the tall task of guarding Johnny Davis, Wisconsin's best player by far, and he did a really good job, held him under his season average, and most of his points came in the first couple minutes of the game. So Xavier Green really surprised me on Sunday. He hasn't had the biggest impact in a lot of the other games, but if they continue down this road of leaning on him defensively, I really like what Xavier Green can do, and maybe it's just because it just happened the other day, but I'm really high on the leadership. He's one of the oldest, maybe the oldest player in the Big Ten, and he really showed me that he can be somebody that they can rely on. And I and Julian Reese has been, as you said, in spurts, a very, very talented player, which is to be expected. I think that he has He has his freshman moments as well. And then Ian Martinez, he's interesting. He's long, he's athletic, but he turns the ball over, and I haven't seen a ton of positive output from him thus far. Doesn't mean he can't turn it around, but Xavier Green's really been what's something that's positive coming out of the bench, especially from Sunday.
Yeah, I agree. Xavier Green, I mean, he kind of put on a show, and it took me a little while writing the game story and actually doing color for WMUC at the same time. I was a little tied up in the press box, press area, but Xavier Green, I looked up and I said, he's guarding Johnny Davis every time Wisconsin has the ball on offense. And he did a good job at it. And that's why he went to the post game and he got to talk to the reporters. And just if he can continue that play, that's the perfect guard you can have coming off the bench, a guy that can be a defensive stopper for you. And then Martinez is just another guard that can come in and give Fats Russell or Eric Ayala a breather when they need it and kind of command the offense from a point guard role. He's a new piece. It's taking time for all of these guys to kind of mesh. And then my thing with Julian Reese is, we talked about it, he has his moments where he looks like a bona fide star, and he has his moments where you know he's a freshman. But maybe the most interesting thing for him will be next season. Maybe not this one. Because if you think back, he hasn't maybe drawn a ton of comparisons to Jalen Smith, but Jalen Smith was the last forward, big man, center, whatever you want to call it, to come from Baltimore. He went to Mount St. Joe, came to Maryland. Sophomore year, tore up the Big Ten. They won the Big Ten that year, a share of first place, and he went on to the NBA, went 10th overall. So there's no reason that Reese couldn't make maybe a similar jump.
But, oh, yeah, the potential is there. And I can also tell your love for Baltimore, Logan.
Oh, yeah.
With naming those high schools.
Absolutely. Growing up, obviously, I'm from the area. I'm from Anne Arundel County, Maryland. So not necessarily Baltimore, but it was always interesting for me because I had family. I had cousins that they went to Mount St. Joe. And I heard about this kid, Jalen Smith. I think I might have been either a junior or a senior. And they're like, yeah, he's committed to Maryland. He's going to be crazy. And then so he had the nickname Sticks. Like, he was walking around on campus. He was actually at my orientation, I'm pretty sure, back in the day. He sat in the back. I was like, who's that tall dude? Jalen Smith. Yeah, he was really good. And then just, I don't know, I feel like people really love when a guy comes from Baltimore and goes to Maryland. So it gets hyped up maybe more than it should, but yeah, always worth noting.
Yeah. And I mean, and the similarities just in, they're both long, lanky, big men, that have the potential to stretch the floor. Jalen Smith was a very, very good shooter at Maryland, and he's breaking out in the NBA now, which is fun to see. I've seen him. I saw him in the Chick-fil-A line at Stamp so many times. That dude loves his Chick-fil-A. So, yeah. And Julian Reese has the potential to do that as well. He'll get his looks from the top of the key. You've seen it a couple times in Maryland games where he'd be a little hesitant to shoot the ball. And some of that comes with developing a jump shot, and some of it is just developing confidence. And when you're playing in the Big Ten as a freshman in front of these Maryland fans, and opposing teams fans at that, it's going to take some time to get adjusted to, and he's already shown flashes of potential. So I think the ceiling is really high for Julian Reese. I'm excited to see him grow and develop. But as for this season, he's not going to completely take over every game is what I'm saying as a freshman. It just comes with the territory of being a freshman in the Big Ten Conference, nothing against his play.
Absolutely. And I think that's clear, because if he was really that talented right now, he would be taking more minutes from Kadus Wahab, who started every single game. So
very true.
He's coming off the bench right now, and maybe that's the best spot for him this season as he continues to get accustomed to the college game. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the roster, the players that you're seeing on a nightly basis. Some other guys mixed in at spurts, but we won't go to them tonight. Let's shift back now to the present. Let's talk about last week. Maryland 0-3 last week, played three really good opponents in conference. I covered the game against Iowa, you covered Illinois, and then we both covered Wisconsin. And they had a chance in all those games, hard-fought contests. They ended up coming out on the losing side all three. They also faced the three top scorers in the nation last week, also in the Big Ten Conference. I mean, that doesn't really happen where they're all from the same conference, but just I'll start with Iowa and then I'll let you talk a little bit about Illinois. Against Iowa, they went up against Keegan Murray, the leading scorer in the nation coming to that game. And the first couple minutes, it looked like Keegan Murray and Iowa Hawkeyes were just going to run away with it. And here comes Maryland. They storm all the way back. They get a lead. They go back and forth with them a little bit and just run out of gas in the second half. And Keegan Murray makes a big-time play, gets an offensive rebound at the end and kind of puts it out of reach. And so that one was it was tough, but they knew they had Illinois up on the docket next and Kofi Coburn. And, Noah, you covered that one, so if you could fill me in a little bit on that.
Yeah, and the first half was very, very similar to the Iowa game, where Maryland's come out slow in their last few matchups. They were down double digits against Iowa. They were down by 21 against Wisconsin on Sunday, and Illinois was the same thing. They were down and they came back and they led at the half. Same thing with Iowa. They led at the half at Iowa, or against Iowa, and they led at the half against Illinois. And I mean, they couldn't bring it out. They couldn't bring out the win, namely because Kofi Coburn really took over in that second half. He ended with I don't remember the exact stat line, but I know he had over 20 rebounds and he had over 20 points. He had an insane game. I know, Logan, you're gonna pull up the stats to bail me out there, but Kofi Coburn really took over, and it showed a flaw in Maryland's offense, or Maryland's defense, excuse me. But it also left a lot of positives, given that they were up at halftime against a really solid Illinois team. And they battled to the end. They didn't completely run out of gas. It's just Kofi Coburn was a little too much to handle for Caduce Wahab down low.
Absolutely. He had 23 points and 18 rebounds in that win for the Illini. 18 rebounds matches his season high. So he ate him up, and he went to the bench early in that first half with two quick fouls. And so once he made it to the second half of play, he was kind of able to just come up and dominate. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, both of Maryland centers fouled out of that one before it was all said and done.
I know Julian Reese fouled out. They definitely had their own foul trouble. I don't remember exactly if they both fouled out, but they had their struggles with containing him. It's a solid guess to say that they couldn't handle him because they hadn't seen someone like that before. And when Kofi Coburn sat down, you could see it. Maryland was re-energized. They came back swinging. And that's something that's a big positive for this team, because plenty of times in multiple games, they could have really given up. Interim head coach, people are saying a lost season, and they really showed their grit and resilience. So it's a shame that they went 0-3 in their last three games. It's just they went up against some really talented teams. So it'll be fun to see what they can do with the rest of the season, especially because they're not going to face Kofi Coburn every night. You know, they're not going to face Johnny Davis every night. So, three tough losses, and you can tell in the post game, Danny Manning was a little upset, just because they had their chances in all of those games. But that's also a positive, given that the caliber of the teams that they're playing against.
Absolutely. And just to put a bow on last week, Wahab did foul out against Illinois. Kofi Coburn just had his way with Maryland's front court the whole way. And then against Wisconsin, you mentioned that they were down 21. It took them forever to get the double-digit points. And then in a flash, they used a 15-0 run to just kind of get back into things. And if they've talked about it all year, we've heard it mentioned in a couple of different post games. Fats Russell said it a couple times. If they could play a full 40 minutes, this team could have a much different record than they do right now. They just haven't been able to put it together for an entire game. So their loss to Wisconsin on Sunday night dropped them to 0-4 in conference play. The first time they've done that since 1992 and 93, when they finished 2-14 in the then they were in the ACC. So they finished 2-14 in the ACC. But also worth noting is they did start conference play a season ago, 1-5. And they finished 9-11 in the conference. They ended up making it to the NCAA second round. So it looks like the world might be falling down right now around Maryland basketball. And if you ask a fair weather fan in College Park, the world might be on fire. But there's still a lot of season in front of them.
Yeah, and sometimes when you're scrolling through Maryland basketball Twitter, it doesn't seem like that. But there are some positives. There are a lot of positives to come out of these games. Not saying that Maryland's going to make an impromptu Final Four run or anything, but I don't think the season is as dark as some people may paint it to be, although they are 0-4 in conference play.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's move ahead. Let's look at these contests they have this week. Hopefully you're listening to this ahead of the Northwestern game Wednesday night. We're planning on dropping it Wednesday morning. A chance for revenge against Northwestern. That was their first conference matchup way back, I believe it was early December. It was the first game after Turgeon parted ways with the program, and Northwestern just kind of came in and took advantage of a team in disarray.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can take from that game, given that their coach of 10 plus years had just departed, and the team was, as you said, in disarray, and Northwestern really took advantage of it. Although the final score was 67-61, it wasn't a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. And Maryland, I mean, they fought to the end against a Big Ten opponent. And without their leader at the time, and with a lot of questions left to be answered. So looking forward to Northwestern again. Northwestern is they're playing pretty well now, given the fact that they've lost a couple. They just lost to Ohio State, who's a very, very solid team. They lost, it was on the road, and they lost by single digits. They had three players with 20 or more points, and they outscored Ohio State in the second half. So they're coming off of, albeit a loss, a very no moral victories, but a not a bad loss. And they got three really solid players: Ty Berry, Pete Nance, Chase Audige. So Maryland's seen them once. They're going to be gunning for revenge now with a little bit more stability than they had earlier in early December. But it's going to be another tight matchup for the Terps.
And that one again on Wednesday night, it should be a good one. After that, they'll come back home to College Park. They'll face Rutgers on Saturday. And let me just tell you, the Scarlet Knights have had themselves quite a last, we'll say, 35 days. It started off, they knocked off then number one Purdue at the buzzer, Ron Harper Jr. from half court.
Crazy.
It was a crazy game. And then so they lose their next one. They drop one to Seton Hall, and it was an obvious letdown spot. I mean, you just beat the number one team in the country. But since then, they are riding a four-game winning streak ahead of their matchup with Penn State. That was Tuesday night. We can't time travel. You're probably listening to this on Wednesday. So they could either come in winners of five when they come to College Park, or they could be on a fresh losing streak. Regardless, they're playing really good basketball. And Rutgers and Maryland, always two teams that are kind of across whatever sport you want to look at, linked to one another because they came into the Big Ten at the same time. So you know that one's going to be a good game. And if Maryland's able to come out on the winning side against Northwestern, they'll be looking to make it two straight in conference play, so a lot to play for.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting how Danny Manning will game plan against Ron Harper Jr., excuse me, who's one of the best players in the Big Ten, 16.3 points per game right now, big physical presence. And he hit that buzzer beater half court shot that I had to watch that. I watched it live because I saw someone tweeting about it, and that was one of the craziest moments of the college basketball season already, and that was early, very early in the season. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Ron Harper Jr. They got some quality wins, and they beat Michigan, they beat Nebraska. They did get blown out by Illinois, but as you said, are on that four-game winning streak.
Absolutely. And also, I saw the Rutgers shot. I saw it on Twitter too, and I just missed it. I flipped it right during the madness that ensued. But with that being said, that is this week in Maryland basketball coming up in terms of games. Let's project a little bit. Let's talk about what the reasonable expectations for the rest of this season are.
Yeah, I guess I can start there. In my opinion, it's hard to gauge where this team can go, especially because of those close losses. As we've talked about all night long, it's they've shown flashes of serious potential, I think that if they're going to make an impromptu run and make the tournament, which seems very unlikely right now, but who knows what can happen in a long college basketball season, they really need a leader to step up consistently. Eric Ayala has shown flashes of being a leader. He's been on the team for years, but there's stretches where he disappears. Same thing with Fats Russell. In contrast to his Instagram handle, there are some limits to what he can do in taking over a game, although he is dynamite. Another thing that would definitely help is more consistency getting Hakeem Hart the ball. I'm a big Hakeem Hart believer, given his scoring potential, but there's flashes. There's stretches where they don't get him. I think they just don't get him the ball. And maybe that's the defense, adjusting, but I think that their peak is, a first or second round NCAA tournament appearance. And that's their absolute peak, in my opinion. But I could also see them really tanking it up this year if they lose hope with an interim head coach. Although with the resilience they've shown so far, I really think that despite being 0-4, they're trending in a positive direction because of the new pieces. When they get more comfortable, I think that they have the potential to keep it close with a lot of Big Ten teams.
Yeah, for sure. I gotta stop saying absolutely soon. But for sure. And I think that I like where you put their ceiling is if everything goes right the rest of the way, they could be talking about an NCAA tournament. Maybe they go on a hot streak run in the Big Ten tournament or something and find a way to sneak in or get in. But yeah, I mean, it's an all-conference schedule the rest of the way. And really, I mean, anything could happen. And I think what we'll start seeing is if they were to lose to Northwestern to Wednesday night tonight, if you're listening on Wednesday, if they're to lose that game, somebody somewhere along the way will step up, whether that is Eric Ayala or Fats Russell or Dante Scott. Somebody will become the alpha on this team, for better or for worse, and that could lead to better results in the win-loss column. It could lead to better play. We really don't know. And I think, Danny Manning is still adjusting to being the head coach of this team. He wasn't expecting this when he signed on at Maryland. And so I don't know. I don't think that they're going to give up. And one thing that's worth noting is we've talked all season about how that on-court chemistry takes time to develop. One thing that this team doesn't lack is chemistry socially amongst one another. They all like each other. They like playing together. So with a group like that, they can figure things out and maybe string together some wins here down the stretch.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And so that kind of does it for us for right now, for the present, for the team, for what's coming up, what happened last week. We kind of wanted to do something fun to wrap up our first ever podcast here.
First ever.
The Right Bench Podcast. We're going to talk about our top five games from our time as a student before we covered the team, because for Noah and myself, both our first time covering Maryland men's basketball as beat reporters. I'm sure, have you done any work around the men's basketball team before this year?
Nope. I was purely a freshman watching as a fan, and then my sophomore year as well. So this is my first time really covering the team, which has been so fun so far. So it's going to be really cool to kind of go over our favorite games just before we started watching, kind of take a trip down memory lane.
Yep. And just to preface, I've never covered the team as a beat reporter before this season. I did get a chance to do a couple of games for WMUC Sports Student Radio, and I'm going to list this one. This one won't make my list because technically I covered the game, but I got a chance last New Year's Eve when they played Michigan at home. Somebody was sick or somebody fell out, couldn't do the game. Brendan Hartlove, WMUC Sports finest.
Legend. Brendan
Hartlove. He reached out to me. He knew I was kind of local, and I was able to come down and do the game that night. That was just a really cool experience. There was no fans. Obviously, it was pandemic, and that was a really cool experience. But let's go to our top fives, and I'll let you start with number five, Noah.
Yeah, so coming in at my number five is one of the more recent games. To preface, I was not always a Maryland fan growing up. I did grow up in the area. I'm from Montgomery County, born and raised. But I actually, my dad went to the prestigious University of Michigan, and I grew up a diehard Wolverines fan. So I obviously went to the University of Maryland, and that's where my allegiances lie. But growing up, I was a Wolverine. So all of my picks are pretty recent. Starting with at my number five is the win against UConn in the NCAA tournament. I just thought it was so impressive that with this roster, the roster wasn't bad, but it was not a team that I expected to make any noise in the tournament. And while they did get an exit in the second round, thanks to Alabama, who literally did not miss a shot that entire game, it seemed like, they really put together a solid performance against UConn. It was really fun to watch. I watched it with some of my friends. And last year there was not a lot of, there were not a lot of bright moments. For me personally, just with the, it was a bad COVID year, my sophomore year, a lot of COVID isolation, and to be brought together and to watch Maryland win a tournament game, especially with the roster that they had, was super fun. And I really enjoyed watching that game. How about you, Logan? What's your number five?
My number five, and hold on, let me just, on the flip side of Noah's Wolverine allegiance, I'm from Maryland. I'm from Anne Arundel County, Maryland. I think I mentioned that already. But I did grow up a huge fan of the Terps. People go wherever they want to go to college. For whatever reason, growing up, I always thought I would come here and then I was able to get in. I really like journalism, and so I pursued that. Like sports, but with journalism, as you and I have learned, Noah, you're able to I can't say it tonight, but you're able to set aside your fandom when it comes to covering a team. And that's an interesting thing because you get closer to the team than a fan ever could. But before I had the chance to do all that I'm doing this year, my number five game was from 2018. I was a fresh-faced freshman on the block, me and my roommate from home. We lived together in a dorm with no air conditioning. We lived on the top floor.
Where did you live?
It was called Worcester Hall. It was right next to McKeldin. It was this small little three-story dorm, and it was a lot of fun, and it was so hot the first couple of weeks that me and him pitched in, and we were able to get this, like, air conditioning unit that you put into the window. You were definitely not allowed to have them in the dorms. It was like black market for us. Like, we just put it up in there, and we were cool enough with our – oh, my goodness. It's 1:30. on Monday night, so
yeah, it is pretty late. It is pretty
not really there, but we were cool with our RA, and he actually, it's funny, he ended up becoming the student body president of, like, the Maryland SGA the next year, and wow, we were so tight with him. And so he just said, like, oh yeah, I figured out what they were too late, so I couldn't tell you to get rid of it. But anyways, that was such a deep, deep wormhole. The Big Ten ACC challenge my freshman year when Maryland played Virginia. That was the first game, one of the first big games I went to as a fan, and we sat up in the wall, not down in the student section, but up in the wall, and it was just electric, and it came down to the final minutes. Maryland lost in a nail biter, but it was just really a great, like, first experience as a college basketball fan. That being said, let's hear your number four.
Yeah, my number four is very similar to yours. It was my first ever game as a doe-eyed freshman. And it was against Fayetteville State of all teams. So it was a pretty much a blowout win for the Terps. But I was up sitting in the wall with a friend that I had just made in my Comm 107 class. And I was so excited to be there. And I remember the flag drop, and, It was a really cool moment because I had seen the football games, and football that year was, I mean, it is how it is most years. They started off strong and then lost like 8 million in a row. But seeing Maryland basketball was super cool for me. And I knew that it was something that I wanted to cover in the future, which is why I'm so excited to be here with my friend Logan Hill. Now, talking about Maryland basketball, so Fayetteville State always has a special place in my heart. How about, what's your number four?
So my number four was actually your number five, that NCAA tournament win against Connecticut. It was just, it was such a good feeling watching that game, not having any work. Actually, I think I might have had to, was supposed to make gifts for that game or something, and it just ended up not working. They started to like black us out there at the end of the season that year. Like we couldn't cut screen grabs or whatever, but it was just, I watched it with some friends, and that team had no business playing in the NCAA tournament. And they took down UConn, who had a future NBA draft pick and James Booknight on the team. And just an exciting team last year. I mean, they played switch everybody defense, and they didn't have a center, and they won an NCAA tournament game. So that was my number four. What's your number three?
My number three is when Maryland clinched a share of the Big Ten title against Michigan. It was extremely special for me because, so as I said earlier, my dad was a Michigan grad, so he came up to College Park and we watched it, and my dad was wearing his Michigan attire, and I got to rub it in his face a little bit when Maryland won, and I got to see them cut down the nets, and I was so excited. I was thinking, I wonder how far this team will go in the NCAA tournament. And then we all know what happened next, but it was a cool moment for me to share with my dad. Michigan normally gets the better of Maryland in a lot of things, especially football, which we always watch together. So to see them go up on the ladders and cut down the nets and get that Big Ten tournament title was super cool for me. And that's why it's in my top five favorite basketball games to cover. Logan Hill, what's your number three?
For sure. Before I get to my number three, were you at the Xfinity Center for that game when they won the Big Ten season?
Yes.
In the building? Yeah, I was home. I was at my dorm. I had a commitment for Terps Watch, but that's like something that's really surreal too, is like working a game when it's a big moment. Cutting down the nets was crazy because I'm a little too young to remember the 2002 national championship.
So yeah, that was like I the was first one. Time.
I think I was two or close to it, but yeah, no. So that was the first time I've ever seen them cut down the nets for something. So it was awesome. And the great what if maybe in Maryland basketball in the 2010s, 2020s. But my number three is their 2019 NCAA tournament win against Belmont, because that was sort of like a Jalen Smith coming out party. He had that big dunk at the end and just kind of slammed it home. People went crazy. And honestly, they should have beat Belmont by more than, I think it was a 2-point win when it all was said and done. And it was just a good feeling. You were riding good vibes. They had a chance to go, and then they lost the next game to LSU right at the end. So it was just a great game. And just, they said, you come into Maryland and they're like, yeah, we're a basketball school. It was games like that that made me understand what that meant. With that being said, let's go to our top two. What's your number two?
Yeah, I mean, one small thing about that Belmont game, I was a senior in high school when that that happened, and I remember watching it. I was at my high school theater rehearsal. I was in the auditorium watching. I was watching all the March Madness games because I've always been a nerd for March Madness and bracketology and all that stuff, which I'm sure we'll have segments on this podcast in future episodes, even if Maryland doesn't make the tournament, because I know I'll destroy Logan in my bracket. But I remember seeing that Jalen Smith dunk and just going nuts. And I was considering Maryland. I hadn't committed yet. And that was maybe that turned the dial for me a little bit. Who knows? But yeah, moving on to my number two was Daryl Morcell's game winner against Minnesota my freshman year. And that this was on the road. This was, and I distinctly remember I lived in La Plata Hall, LP9, my freshman year. And we were all watching it hall, but we were up in the lounge area. We were watching it on the TV, and I was frustrated as all Maryland fans are at their team. And it's coming down to the wire, and Daryl Morcell puts up a prayer from three. And I remember thinking as the ball is going up, oh my God, Daryl, what type of shot is that? Come on. Like, you just sold the game. And he makes it, and we all go nuts. We all go, we go crazy. My roommate was there, and we had so much fun. And I remember he Jalen Smith picked him up, and it was a really cool moment. to be with other Maryland fans, friends that I made, and to see that happen, it was just a really, really sick shot. So that's my number two. How about you, Logan?
For sure. I'll get to my number two in a second. But that game as well, I mean, the thing with Darren Morsell, it's like he was never the guy that you wanted to throw up a game
winning three. Exactly.
Just let it fly and acted like he had made that shot 1,000 times before. That was one of the best finishes I've seen in my time as a student here at Maryland. But my number two is go back to the 2018-19 season. I was a freshman. When Purdue came to College Park, they were a ranked team, and Maryland just wiped the floor with them, used a big second half to beat them. And Eric Ayala actually crossed over Carson Edwards and sent him to the floor. And I don't know how much you remember about Carson Edwards before he went on to the NBA, but he was a terror when he was at Purdue, just a great scorer and just a lethal guard. And so for Maryland to kind of embarrass them at the Xfinity Center, it was just a really fun experience. So with that being said, I only have one left, and I think you have one left too. I think they're the same game.
Oh, yeah, they got to be the same game. That was crazy, crazy game. So I guess we obviously have different experiences with it, but the number one game has to be when I was a freshman, so 2 years ago, it was at 2019-2020.
Yep.
The Illinois win, it was a Gold Rush game. I still have the shirt from it. And that was the Anthony Cowan, the infamous shot from the Gary Williams logo or the signature that set the place on fire. I've never been – granted, I didn't go to a ton of sporting events live in person growing up. I was a huge sports nut, as most sports journalism majors are. But I would always watch on my TV with my family. And so to see a shot like that, and I think he drew a foul on the other end or got a steal on the other end as well. And just to see the sea of gold go nuts, it had to be my number one. So I know it is yours as well. So what was your experience with seeing that shot?
For sure. That was my number one as well. And I mentioned it, I think, for one of the other games on my list, but I worked for Terps Watch, and for part of our responsibilities is we're supposed to GIF for the games and just put them up on Twitter, and you like gift the big moments. And all my roommates, I had 5 roommates that year. They all went to the game. I think one of them got me a Gold Rush t-shirt. So shout out. Cause those are my favorite shirts that they give out here, is the Gold Rush ones. But I was just sitting in my dorm. I think we had a suite that year. We lived on the Washington Quad, and Maryland was down, I'm pretty sure. And here they come, they're coming back, and big shot Cowan just drills it. And I'm like, so when I'm doing the GIFs, I'm watching it on the TV and on my computer, because my computer is about 20 seconds behind or whatever. So I see it on the TV. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. So I'm trying to cut it, and I put it up. And back then, like, it was one of the best performing tweets we had in a while. I mean, obviously that ebbs and flows, but it was crazy. And it's one of those, like, when you're done your work for the day, you log off, and then you remember you go to school here, and it just kind of charges you up as a Maryland student. So it was just a really, really fun experience.
Yeah, Anthony Cowan was dynamite that year. It was so fun to watch. And it always breaks my heart that that team didn't have a chance in the NCAA tournament. But that's the best game that I've been to. Best basketball game I've been to at Maryland, so.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we'll never know about what that team could have done, but yeah, that was our top fives. I mean, we'll explore some different top fives as we continue to do this podcast, but that about does it for our initial show. And Noah, I mean, this is your first ever time podcasting. How would you rate the experience so far?
Oh man, 10 out of 10. Anytime I'm here chilling with Logan Hill talking sports, I mean, you can't beat it. So it's going to be a fun ride. This is just the beginning, and I'm so excited to continue bringing Maryland basketball content, Maryland content in general. We'll get some women's basketball in here. I'll definitely spill some volleyball takes. I'm a big Maryland volleyball guy, so we'll get a lot of Maryland athletics, but mainly Maryland men's basketball on here. So yeah, what about you, Logan?
For sure. I had a great time. I explored some podcasting back during when all classes were online last year, and I just had some more free time, and I haven't been able to do it for a while. I've been busy at school covering all things Maryland, so it's cool to finally let the school work meet the stuff that I did as a hobby in the free time, and just a pleasure to do it with my great friend, Noah Ferguson. But before we get out of here, let's wrap up and let's go back to this week in Maryland basketball history. So we're going back to the 2002 season, the year that Maryland won it all, the national championships, and we're going to January 9th, 2002. Back in the ACC back then, they were playing against UNC, and they wiped the floor with the Tar Heels, beat them 112-79. And who were the key players in that one, Noah?
Yeah, in that 33-point victory, Juan Dixon put up 29 points to go with 8 steals to lead the charge for the Terps. And Steve Blake, the legendary Steve Blake, put up 12 points, 14 rebounds, 12 points, 14 assists, and 9 rebounds, excuse me. So the nearly a triple-double for the legendary Steve Blake. And that was a season for the books. Logan and I were infants when that happened, but that's our moment from January 9th, 2002. So Juan Dixon leading the way over UNC. We haven't played UNC in a while, have we?
No, I don't think that since maybe 2016 when Maryland was – I watched that whole game. I was still in high school, obviously, but I think they were ranked like second and UNC was up there in the top 10 and they went to Carolina and then UNC just waxed them. It was tough, but that was the Trimble years, which were a lot of fun. And so that about does it for us on the first ever Right Bench podcast. We'll be back sometime next week, talk all things Maryland basketball as Maryland tries to turn around, as Noah put it. What was the word you used earlier, the one that comes to mind?
Tumultuous.
As Maryland tries to turn around a tumultuous season. That about does it for me. I'm Logan Hill, joined by Noah Ferguson, and thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the first ever episode, and we'll be back soon. Take care.